Well, a quick Google search of Dr. Frank and election will result in the following. The Johnny Appleseed of election fraud. Here's my one of my favorites. Election denier draws large crowd. Big lie huckster peddles bogus conspiracy. And then maybe even the best one of all from CNN. The 2020 election wasn't stolen, but Douglas Frank and his bogus blah, blah, blah. Dr. Frank, welcome to Alaska. And I can't wait to discuss this with you. Is this your first trip to Alaska?
On this mission, yes. I came here fishing 20 years ago, but on the election trend, yes, this is my first trip here.
It's interesting to, just like I said, do a quick Google search, and if you find out, hey, Dr. Frank is going to be speaking around Alaska, and here's what he's going to be talking about, election integrity, and then you do that kind of a search, and you start reading any of these articles, and you could quickly assume, oh, yeah, this is a bunch of conspiracy, but I have to tell you, I know nothing. I can prove nothing, but in my gut, Dr. Frank, I know something went wrong with the 2020 election. I just can't prove it. For anybody who's on the fence or a little bit aware or has already done this research and already believes you're a conspiracist, what's one or two things you could say that might at least intrigue somebody to hear you out?
Okay. I've done a lot of fancy math to help people examine their voter rolls to find fraud. But that's hard to describe in a short amount of time. So I've come up with some simple things that I can show people and explain. So for example, in the state of Alaska, you have the dirtiest voter rolls in the country. What do I mean by that? Well, you have 108% of your voting age people registered.
Say that again.
You have 108% of your voting age people registered.
I don't know good math, but that doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. And see, that's a very simple way to intrigue people. What do you mean we have? You mean to tell me we have more people registered than we have people? That's correct. And if you actually go knock on doors, if I give you a copy of your voter rolls and you go start knocking door to door, you'll discover that a lot of people are not registered at all to vote. So really, the problem is far worse than that. You have more than 108%. You've got something like if you wanted to know what percent of your rolls are people who are not really voters, in other words, they're dead or they moved away or they don't even know they're registered and in the rolls, it's something like 30%. So round numbers, 1 in 3, 1 in 4, the people in your voter rolls don't belong there.
I thought that was relegated to Chicago. I thought that, you know, like the graveyard of Chicago votes more than anybody else. I didn't expect to hear something like that about Alaska. How does that then correlate to the 2020 election as far as, or does it? Or is that just a statistic that says, wait a minute, something is wrong? Is there a direct corollary to the 2020 election then?
Yes. So, see, you asked me, you know, what would I say to a person who knows something's wrong, but, mm-hmm. you know, how would I introduce them to the topic? That's the first thing I would do. Mm-hmm. And I would say, and by the way, Alaska's not the only place. There are 8 states that have more people in the voter rolls than they have people. And it isn't limited to Democrat states or Republican states. It's a bipartisan issue. Kentucky has 105% of their people registered, and Oregon has 105% of their people registered. So you've got a red, blue, and a red state and a blue state. Doesn't matter. So once you realize that the voter rolls are full of people that are not real voters, and you realize that this situation is in every state in the country, so that's one of the first ways I introduce people to this topic. And those are undeniable facts. I mean, you can go verify every claim. You can go right to the Secretary of State website of these. In your state, Alaska, the lieutenant governor runs the elections, but in most states, it's the Secretary of State. You can go to their website and confirm all the numbers I claim. So it's not debatable. Those facts are real. What's debatable as well are, is there any fraud as a result? So step one is I show them that their rolls are inflated. Then step two, we say, well, now, how many of your ballots are coming in by mail and how many ballots are being counted in person? And the percentages that are coming in by mail or say Dropbox are dramatically increasing. In 2020, for example, and that's why I'm tying it back to that, because that was your question. In Ohio, for example, 55% of the ballots came in by mail or Dropbox. Well, if you have rolls that are full of people who aren't real voters, and you have all these ballots coming in, many of them can be coming from people who are not real voters. That's how the fraud gets into the election. Most of the fraud that we see is not, you know, John Smith shows up at the polls and they check his ID and his name and he signs the book and votes on a piece of paper. That's not where most of the fraud is. Most of the fraud is what they call chain of custody. You've got ballots coming in that you're not sure are from who you think they're from. And that sort of ballot stuffing is the primary way of cheating elections. And that's been going on for decades, actually probably a century. And so the reason we're in the situation we're in is because we've lost control of our elections. Now, in every state in America, our elections are controlled centrally from the state level. So when I'm making my presentations, I start by just showing people their own voter rolls and their own voting trends, and that their voter rolls are growing faster than their population. That's suspicious. And then I say, by the way, now let's just look at this county by county, or as in Alaska, borough by borough. And you notice that this, you have the same problem in every borough or in every county. And by the way, do you notice that your rolls are growing the same rate in every county or every borough? Well, wait a minute. Are your populations all growing the same? No. Then why are your rolls growing the same? That's suspicious. And so then as I go, county by county or borough by borough, I then go in and I give them a copy of their voter roll. And I'll say, let's look at this. You notice that this house here has four people registered to vote who all voted, but they all have different last names. Well, that's interesting. Let's go knock on that door and ask questions. And what we've learned usually in that situation, we find that one of the people still lives there, but the others do not. They live somewhere else or in another state. And yet somebody is casting a vote in their name. So it's actual fraud. So that's why having the voter rolls dirty opens up the possibility for ballot stuffing and fraud. And so that ties us directly back to the 2020 election. That's how you're able to get such a huge turnout, higher than ever. Like Biden got more ballots than any president in history, and Trump got more ballots than any Republican candidate ever got in history. Well, what's going on here? There's a lot of ballot stuffing going on. That's what's going on. And we can prove that by doing canvassing efforts. So that's kind of what I do going around the country. So I try to keep it simple there. I can do fancy math, but those basic ideas are how I show people. And notice that every one of those things that I do is totally confirmable. And if you read those articles that you were mentioning at the beginning here, none of them talk about that.
Right. Well, right. And I find it interesting, too, that the pejorative of denier is something that's associated with anything that is science related, but you don't actually, you being the one that's claiming that somebody is a denier, you don't want to deal with their science, only your science or your math. And if they deny your math, then suddenly they're painted with that brush of denier. We see it with the climate. We saw it with COVID and the vaccinations. We see it all the time now. And so I can't help but just wonder, okay, if somebody is listening to this a little bit skeptical, they're a bit jaundiced towards, oh, sure, we've heard claims of election fraud time immemorial. In fact, wasn't it Hillary Clinton who basically denied the results of the 2016 election up until basically 2020? So this is nothing new, but why are you being pushed back so hard against? Why has the New Yorker lampooned you just for pointing out facts?
Yeah, I really like it that you brought up the fact of Hillary Clinton. For 4 years, she was running around the country screaming bloody murder that the Russians hacked our elections. Mm-hmm. They had federal testimony for years and months showing how vulnerable our election systems are. And then now that things went their way, they're saying, oh, no, it's the most secure election in history. And now the Republicans are complaining. What are we going to do? Just keep going back and forth screaming bloody murder that our elections aren't secure? Well, that's the problem. So why are they particularly picking on me, I think, is because I'm probably one of the most outspoken on this issue. What do I mean by that? Well, I've been now in 47 states in 800 counties, and I do this almost every day of my life. I go county to county, teaching people how to find fraud in their own elections. So that, you know, that makes me vulnerable. But also, I've been involved in some pretty notorious situations. You mentioned the New Yorker. They did an article about my work in Mesa County, Colorado, where I did some canvassing for 3 days with teams of canvassers. We went out and knocked on doors, and we collected a bunch of legitimate fraud. And we brought it to the county clerk. Her name is Tina Peters, and we showed it to her. And she was convinced that, yep, there's a lot of fraud in her election. And she asked me, what do I do, Dr. Frank, about this? And I said, well, this was in April of 2021. I said, you have an election coming up in May. You better get everything backed up before your machines lose the information from the election. And she agreed. She even said, and gee, the Secretary of State of Colorado has asked all the clerks to back up their systems anyway, because Dominion Systems is about to come in and reprogram all of our machines for the next election. So will you help me get backups of my machines, Dr. Frank? And so I did. I helped her get backups. We did what's called forensic images. They're a special type of backup where it copies every bit and byte off of a system. Policemen use it, sheriffs use it when they're doing legal investigations, because once you take the backup, it can't be changed. That's why they call it a forensic backup. So we forensically backed up all of our systems, and then Dominion came in and reprogrammed them. And then we sent our guy in again, and he forensically backed up everything again. So we know everything that Dominion had done. And then they had their election, and then we have the results afterwards. So we have a really clear picture of all the activity that was going on in those machines. Well, when the governor of Colorado discovered that we had those images, she went into panic mode, and they launched all kinds of lawsuits against Tina Peters. And that's what the New Yorker was talking about. It exposes the fact that her machines have the ability to go online. We discovered they had 36 modems in her machines, and she swore up and down that her machines were not capable of going online. But actually, we have the logs, because we have the forensic images. We have the logs proving that they are going online during the elections. And so that's a panic. And so I think when you're over, you know, General Michael Flynn, when he saw the New Yorker article, he called me up and said, he says, well, I can tell you're over target, because when you're over target, then they come after you the fastest. So that's an example. And I think that's an answer why I'm in the media so often, because they're afraid of me. CNN actually sent a whole film crew to Texas to film one of my events. And that's that article you mentioned. You know, that was when I was in Texas, because I was wearing my Texas bow tie in that interview. I like to wear bow ties. I'm a scientist. And so scientists, we wear bow ties, because if you wear long ties, they get in the beakers. So you wear short ties.
I did not understand that. Now it makes sense. And I can't wait to see what you're wearing as an honorarium for Alaskans. But let me ask you this, though. You've joined an elite group of people that have been targeted by the FBI. In fact, the WAPO posted that the FBI seized the phone of election denier Douglas Frank. We have an illustrious family here in Homer who had their door broken down for having attended the rally at J6 or January 6th in Washington, D.C. They did not go into the Capitol, but nevertheless, the FBI came in, took their phones, and as well as their constitution, and for some unknown reason. But tell me about that. What was it like having the FBI seize your phone? I mean, that has to be surreal.
Yeah, it was a Tuesday of it was about a year ago. I think it was September a year ago. It was a Tuesday. Mike Lindell was coming back from a hunting trip somewhere in the Northwest, and he got cornered in a Hardee's in his drive-through. He's a sucker for chocolate malt, and the FBI cornered him in the drive-through and seized his phone. And during that time, it was about a 30-minute period of time where they were taking his phone, they asked him all about Doug Frank. And so that night, when the media was interviewing Mike about this, about them seizing his phone, he mentioned that. And I heard that interview because I'm friends with Mike. And I thought, and so the next day I'm flying home from, I don't remember what state it was, back to Cincinnati. And I'm just sitting there in the plane and thinking to myself, wait a minute. They took Mike's phone. They asked about Doug Frank. You know what? they're going to take my phone. And so I made sure to get backups of my phone while I was on the airplane. And I took out my laptop and backed everything up. And then we arrived in Cincinnati, and sure enough, there was a team of FBI agents there waiting for me and airport security. And as I got off the airplane, I saw the group of them kind of gravitating towards me. And I was expecting it. It was a rational conclusion, a rational prediction. So what's funny is I diverted and went to the bathroom because I figured they might be detaining me for a while, but they were all waiting for me to, you know, come out after the little boys' room. And they read me, they showed me the warrants, and they took me to an empty gate in at the airport. I arrived kind of late, like 11:30 at night, and they took me to an empty gate and showed me the warrants, and we cooperated. You know, I was kind of expecting it. So, you know, I smiled and shook their hand, and the agents were polite to me. It wasn't like the case you described where they kicked the doors in, and, mm-hmm. or like if you've seen that movie Police State, Sharona Bishop's doors were kicked in. And that was directly related to this case with Tina Peters as well. So it was very polite. And the officer told me, the FBI guy said, by the way, Dr. Frank, we're going to take your phone. We're going to seize your phone. We're going to take it into our technical people. They're going to do a forensic image of it. And then we're going to return it to you tomorrow. And I said, well, thanks. And he says, I'll drive it out to your house and deliver it to you in person. That was a year ago, September, and they still have never returned it. Mm. But would I use it again if they gave it back to me? I don't think so. I don't think so. So that was kind of a predictable situation. So yeah. It wasn't as, you know, it wasn't as traumatic as you might think. And they were perfectly nice to me and everything.
Dr. Frank, anecdotally, I can point to certain things that explain what happened, at least in my mind. For example, I wasn't at all surprised that Donald J. Trump won in 2016. I was an ardent supporter of his. However, how many signs had I posted? Not a one. How many Donald Trump hats was I wearing? Not a one. There were so many people quietly, I believe, and under the radar supporting him that when he won wasn't a surprise to me. It did shock the other side. I felt like they thought it was a lock, but I wasn't surprised at all. And then you fast forward to 2020, and there was so much unexplained events and the landslide, as you said, the number of votes that were garnered for somebody who basically was campaigning from his basement and on empty parking lots. And it's just like, wait yeah. a minute, how could this be? And so I just can't explain it. But then again, as I said before, I cannot put my finger on the pulse of what actually happened. Is it explainable in a short period of time, or does one need to be at one of your symposiums or to really digest this over the course of an hour or more?
I think I can explain what you just described in a couple of minutes, and I think you'll understand. You're absolutely right about 2016. There was a huge movement, and the left underestimated it. But there was also another element that you might not be aware of. And that's that the way our elections are being stolen is it starts with inflated voter rolls. We already discussed that. But then during the election itself, while the votes are being cast and counted and tallied and all that stuff, there are the people who want to do nefarious things are tracking it. They're monitoring it. So they know what the tallies are. They know who has voted. So they know how many more ballots they need to win and who to cast ballots for. They know who to stuff, which names to use to stuff ballots and how many they need. That's during the election. And then after the election, you do cleanup. And in my longer talks, in my longer symposium, I show people data and show how that all works. But for this purpose, I think I can explain this to you. Imagine if during the election, you didn't know the tally and you didn't know who voted. Well, how would you know how to stuff ballots? How would you know how to turn it in your favor? You wouldn't know. You would just have to make your best guess based upon your best polling. So now I'm about to tell you something that maybe most people hadn't heard, most of your audience. In 2016, 3 days before the election day, a team of white hat hackers launched what's called a denial of service attack. Denial of service attack is when you have so many hits on a website that it shuts down. It can't report out. And, you know, those were more popular. Those happen more often years ago than they do anymore today, because there's defenses against it. But they launched a denial of service attack against our critical election systems around the country. So guess what? There was no live reporting. So the bad guys didn't know where they stood. And since, as you correctly described, there's this groundswell of support for Trump that wasn't overt, they underestimated that. And the amount of stuffing that was taking place was insufficient, and Trump exceeded that. And that's why he won in 2016 and why Hillary went around the country yelling for 4 years that Russians hacked our elections. She's right. The election was hacked, but not in the way that most people think. It was hacked in a way that prevented the knowledge from being disseminated, which is interesting. And it wasn't the Russians either. I know who these people were. So that's what happened in 2016. Now in 2020, 4 days before the election, the same team of hackers was doing the same kind of thing. And there was a larger group, actually, this second time around, who were launching this denial of service around the country. So that once again, the bad guys didn't know where they stood. So what did they need to do? Well, they weren't going to make the mistake they made in 2016. So what did they do? At 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on election night, they turned the election off and reset it so they could find out where they stood. And guess what they discovered? Oh, my goodness, we're behind in Michigan. Oh, my goodness, we're behind in Wisconsin. Oh, my goodness, we're behind in Georgia. So that's why when you look at the reporting of the elections, you'll notice a huge sudden surge in each of those states. And I was in the lawsuit in Antrim, Michigan, the Bill Bailey case. And we've proved in that lawsuit that at, I think it was around 10:56 p.m., 156,000 brand new voters were suddenly added to the voter rolls in Michigan who all voted. And that's why you see that sudden spike, that sudden upward surge in Biden votes in Michigan. Well, in that lawsuit, we asked the judge asked the Secretary of State of Michigan to give us a list of those names for those brand new, beautiful voters. And the Secretary of State has to comply because it's a court order. And she said, I'll comply, but it'll take me 2 years to compile that list. So we don't get to know who those people were. So the point I like to make to people is that it worked once to make the elections more fair in 2016, but it didn't work the second time because in the end, whoever controls the machines controls the outcome of the election. And that's not new, right? Stalin said, it doesn't matter who votes. What matters is who counts the vote. And I guess in modern parlance, we would say it doesn't matter who votes. It matters who controls, you know, the machines and has access to the rolls. And, you know, whoever's in control of the election can control the outcome. So that was kind of a long answer, but I think I made it clear enough that even without pictures, I think you can understand what happened.
You have painted a picture, and it's frightening to a certain extent because I feel out of control. I feel like there's not a thing, Dr. Frank, that I can do. There's not a thing that the average person can do. So I guess my question is twofold. Are you getting co-op? Is this movement gaining any traction or at least an airing or a conversation on a national level with our Congress and Senate? And what can I do? What can the individual do?
That was a perfect question. So I spent all of 2021 doing exactly what you just proposed. I thought I could go to legislatures around the country, and I've testified before multiple legislatures under oath, on television, the whole nine yards, showing them the fraud, showing them the problems in their state. And I met with dozens of secretaries of state, dozens of AGs, and these are not 5 minutes selfie meetings. These are like day-long marathons, where I show them the problems with their elections and we hack into their elections right in front of their faces. I have did that for a whole year in 2021, thinking I could reform elections that way. Well, I've basically given up on that. I've learned that governments are not going to, nobody wants to fix their elections. No legislatures want to fix their elections. So I spent basically all of 2022 learning how to work with the grassroots around the country. And I've been starting little teams in counties. I've been now in 800 counties, and I've got hundreds of active teams right now in counties around the country, and I would call them boroughs, of course, in Alaska, or parishes in Louisiana, but teams where they work locally and they find fraud locally. And then once they found fraud locally, they show that to their leaders, their community leaders, because guess what? Citizens have power locally. And so then they show it to the leaders and they say, we don't want to be part of these statewide systems anymore, because these statewide systems are enabling fraud in our community. And each case of fraud is disenfranchising one of us from our real ballot. So we don't want to be part of these systems anymore. And that is gaining momentum around the country. And I could give you a very prominent example, and that's Northern California, the county called Shasta County. They have 75,000 voters there. They decided to go all paper. They have paper poll books, paper ballots, hand-marked paper ballots. They hand-count the ballots themselves, hand-tally them, and hand-report. That puts them back in control of their election. Well, what's the state response to that? Panic. They're passing all kinds of emergency resolutions to try to stop other counties from following suit. But we have multiple other counties in the state of California that are about to flip in the same way. And all around the country, I just came from Nebraska recently, a couple of weeks ago, and York County there has just voted to get rid of all their machines and go all paper. And I don't have anything against machines. I build electronics for a living. What I want is I want local control of elections. And if you have anything electronic, it's not going to be local anymore, because it can be hacked, it can be tracked, it can be manipulated. But if it's on paper, you have paper trail, local human eyes and hands on everything. You can at least audit what's going on, and you have a much better chance of keeping fraud to an absolute minimum.
That sounds like a succinct and wonderful answer to both of those questions. It's what can you do about it? Well, you can get involved. If somebody's listening to this and they say, man, I really want to get involved, I want to know more, is there a website you could point people to either engage with your group or organization or get involved at that grassroots level?
Great question. I used to have a website, but I suffer the same fate as the election systems did. I'm constantly hacked with denial of service attacks. I gave up. I don't have websites anymore. So all my stuff I do is I post it on social media. You know, I post on Facebook, I post on Rumble, I post on Telegram and that sort of thing. And you can find me on Facebook, Douglas G. Frank. You can find me on Telegram, Follow the Data with Dr. Frank. You can find me on Twitter, now called X, Follow the Data with Dr. Frank, that sort of thing. So if you search on whatever your favorite flavor of social media is and look for Follow the Data with Dr. Frank, that's the best way to find me, I think. I work closely with Mike Lindell on a lot of projects. I don't work for him. I'm just myself. I'm just Doug Frank. So he features me a lot on frankspeech.com. And he actually made a documentary about me called Scientific Proof, and it's on there as well. So I think that's the best way to track what's going on with me. And if you contact me at my email, I have a public email that people do. It's Dr. Douglas G. Frank, D-R-D-O-U-G-L-A-S, G like George, Frank, F-R-A-N-K, Dr. Douglas G. Frank at outlook.com. If you send me an email, say, Dr. Frank, I want to get involved. I want to get involved. Send me an email and tell me which county you're in. And it's very likely I've got a team there already. And I'll send you contact information so you can get involved.
I so appreciate your time and effort here in Alaska and around the country, to be honest. 800 counties, that's no small feat. And I'm impressed and honored that you were here on Top of the World. And I guess I would just close with this. Do you remember when we helped orchestrate the first free Democratic election in Afghanistan? I don't remember if it was 03 or 04, but I'll never forget looking at the look in the eyes of those people that were voting for the first time with their purple thumbs, and they would ink their thumbs so as to, you know, make sure you didn't vote twice. You voted already, get out. But they were so excited. And it is part of who we are. And while we're we're not a pure democracy, democracy is such a huge part of our republic. And if it's compromised and fails, then so goes America.
100%. I tell people, you know, they'll say, thank geez, Dr. Frank, thanks for your sacrifice and fighting for our country. And I always tell them, you know what? I'm not really fighting for our country. Countries come and go. I'm fighting for the country that covenanted with God, that made a covenant with God, a country that was founded upon liberty and freedom and virtue. And we've lost that country. That's the country I'm fighting to get back. And it's such an honor to serve God in my country during this amazing time in history. What an amazing time. So I encourage people, you know, look at the gifts that God has given you. Look at the opportunities that you are presented with and step up. Because we as a country, too many of us have kind of become apathetic and complacent, and we're not fulfilling our own civic duties. We're supposed to be being the government. That's the whole idea of this country. We're an experiment in self-government. And we're failing at that experiment right now because we've been paying other people to run the government and paying other people to teach our children and paying other people to run our elections. My friends, it has to be us. We have to be the government. We have to be teaching our kids. We have to be running our own elections. And so that's kind of my message.
Dr. Douglas Frank, thank you so much, sir.
What a pleasure to be with you.